Matt Bubala is downstairs in the showcase studio on Michigan Bubala. Avenue. Matt Bubala.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
We're very well. How was your journey into the station tonight?
It was the so I don't know if just didn't tell you guys this. I overslept. So I woke up. My son tried to wake me up, and I thought it was, you ever do this where you take this nap and then it's just not, you know, you have no idea. So I'm convincing him, no, I'm fine. I got plenty of time. Like, I don't know what I thought it was. So I wake up at 1:05.
Ah. And you live out way in the burbs.
I live way out in the burbs.
I called it.
No one
I
can hear him, but you.
Oh, no one. They can't hear you. I'm sorry. Yeah. I totally called it, Matt. I told the guys in the studio that you were, you might have had, you know, sometimes you oversleep. And I didn't know I was right.
I did. But I made it here. I got in the station actually earlier than I normally do. I got in here at 1:50.
There you go. See, now you know. Now here's the problem now. Now you know you can sleep until 1:05.
Yeah, I won't do that again because I freaked out. And if anything would have gone wrong, if there would have been a lane closure, if there would have been anything, I never would have made it.
But. Hey, Matt, I got your back.
Thank you, Pat.
I'm just saying.
Thank you, Pat.
It happens. No biggie.
Hey, if any of your political roundtable isn't running right out the door, I'd love to ask them about this Democratic memo. If you guys aren't all going out drinking, ask them to swing by.
Can we? We'll all stop down.
If anyone can, that would be awesome.
Can we all stop down?
That would be awesome.
On our way out?
Absolutely.
We didn't even talk about that.
Oh, God. Please stop by then.
Just barely.
I need a fourth grade explanation.
They all want to know. Yeah, the Democrat memo. Yeah, the release the memo.
Release the memo.
What else you got coming up?
We've got a friend from Salt Lake City, a reporter who is in Seoul for the Olympics, so he's going to check in with us, and then we're just going to, you know, talk about our inches all night long.
Your what?
Inches. Yeah, all the inches.
What is going on?
Could you hear?
We're going to stop by on our way out. That's Matt Bubala coming up next.
I don't know if I want to stop by to listen to all these.
I know what he's, what do you think he's talking about?
Sounds like he has inch envy.
Yeah, he does have inch envy. It's time now for our news. By the way, just so you know, this is your 50,000 watt snow plow, 720 WGN Chicago. The emergency closing center is open at WGNradio.com. Matt Bubala is up next.
Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower building on Michigan Avenue. Our time is waning here as they continue to gut the building to create condos, but we're here until they kick us out. Roger Badish up in the newsroom. Jess Raines behind the glass. Hopefully Patty's crew and jumping in the studio here in a minute or two. I don't know. Did they have the Carnival wagon out up there, Roger?
Because
they haven't made their way down here. That was like 10 minutes ago.
Well, they knew since I don't drink, they probably didn't bother asking.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Or their word, you just go after it and take it all from them.
Well,
they're very possessive about their alcohol on my show.
That's
real quick, just had a question. How do we categorize a blizzard? I said, I believe it has something to do with wind as well as snow.
It does.
Do you know
but
what
it's,
it is?
It's mainly, it's, well, let's.
I told Jess, okay, I'll ask Roger. He'll pull out the keyboard, and then we'll look it up live on the air.
Yeah, right. All right. So, why is it saying Blizzard Entertainment? I just want.
Oh, I think that's an adult site you just found there, Roger.
No,
who
I
was
didn't.
Previously on the computer up there?
No,
was it Rob Martier? Yeah, I bet it was.
It's leagues, English, whatever. Hold on. Definition of Blizzard. Okay, we did this like a year ago, didn't we?
I don't remember.
We did this a year ago.
Well,
I remember looking
up
the exact same. I'm old. I can't remember what I did. Thank you. Severe snowstorm with
wind.
With
high winds
and low visibility.
Is there must be an exact time when they categorize it as a blizzard though, right?
What defines a blizzard? We will now see. And you know why I know we looked it up before?
Why?
Because Blizzard Wikipedia was already marked on my computer, which means I've gone to that site before.
Okay.
And it only when you're on. Large amounts of snow blowing, so winds in excess of, take a guess.
I'm going to say 12 miles an hour. A lot more?
Lots more.
30 miles an hour?
35 miles an hour.
40 miles an hour?
35 miles an hour. Visibility is less than a quarter mile for extended period of time, at least 3 hours. Okay?
Wow.
And it often develops on the northwest side of an intense storm system.
Okay.
So there you go.
And Roger, don't you need to have at least one inch of snow along with those winds?
I am looking here. It just says large amounts of snow or blowing snow.
So there's got to be.
This definition doesn't even say how much As far as snowfall.
Is this the Wikipedia definition of a
blizzard? No, that's the AccuWeather, which
I would think that would be
accurate.
Yes, you would.
Typically 3 hours severe cold. Even the Wikipedia doesn't.
Okay, we'll get back to that.
So there you go.
Patty's crew has all jumped in the showcase studio. Goodness.
Is that all right? Sorry, we are descended upon you.
Oh, my God, please.
I love what you've done with the place.
I took Patty's cue and I brought in a lamp. I tried to bring in the smaller lamp. Didn't work.
Yeah, they don't. Neither
I like the smaller lamp.
I think I might have broken one of them. Don't tell Judy Pilot.
I won't tell. No. Well, Marlene would be the one you better avoid with that.
Okay, fine.
Welcome, guys. Thank you for jumping quick.
Hi,
how are you?
How are you?
How are you, guys?
Hello.
Hello, sir.
You can go read his text screen, by the way. He has his open if you want to see if there's any angry texts.
God. Don't even!
Okay.
That damn text screen. Probably got some holdovers from our segments upstairs.
Our favorite.
Hey, Matt, can I tell you something?
Release the memo! All right, so let's give me the fourth grade education on this, because I only read headlines last week. I know there was a Republican memo, the Nunes memo, right? Is that how we say Nunes?
Nunes.
And then...
Mexicans don't say it that way, but go ahead.
Yes. Okay, and so we released that memo, which said what? Because it was derided by one side and lauded by the other. What did that memo say?
It was built up. Fox News and all the GOPers.
The right side said this is a big deal.
You must release the memo. The memo is going to – essentially what the memo was designed to do was to create a pretext to allow Trump to fire Rod Rosenstein because Rod Rosenstein – Stein, I always forget which, is the guy who is the Mueller's boss.
Okay.
And so if you want to fire Mueller, you got to get rid of Rosenstein. And so the theory was that the memo would say all kinds of that there was all kinds of abuses taking place at the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. What the memo wound up saying was that Carter Page, the guy who is the Russian-loving, a guy who actually wrote letters saying that he's an advisor to the Kremlin, and who Trump described in March of 2016 as one of his top foreign policy advisors, that Carter Page was being surveilled, and that there was a FISA warrant issued supposedly inappropriately because it relied in part on the dossier, on the Steele dossier.
Okay.
And so the theory was that the FBI had lied to the FISA court, and therefore all these FBI guys should all be fired. That was what the memo was asserting. But of course, the memo was selective, as the FBI had said, as the Department of Justice had said. They were, quote, gravely concerned that the memo was going to be omitting important information.
Part of which, right, is that they need a lot more than just that single memo, the Steele dossier. They would have needed like several corroborating things to go to the FISA court to get that warrant, right?
Correct. And there wasn't just one FISA warrant issued. There was one FISA warrant issued, and then there were a total of four FISA judges.
It's every 90 days, right?
Every 90 days you have to be renewed, and it has to be renewed not just based upon what was in the initial FISA application, but they have to be able to say, we have found interesting stuff in the last 90 days. Here's what we found, and therefore you need to extend. So this happened four different times.
It was extended four different times.
Well, it was extended three times.
Once and then extended three times. So they must have had stuff going on.
Correct.
And explain to me why. So Rod Rosenstein is the boss of Mueller because Jeff Sessions recused himself.
Correct.
Thereby it fell to Rod Rosenstein. If Mueller came in so late, how does stuff way back then clear the way for him to fire Mueller? Because this is well before Mueller took charge of any investigation.
It's to fire Rosenstein and then presumably either trim Mueller's sails or in some other way find a pretext to get rid of Mueller next.
Okay.
But if you have Rod Rosenstein would have to fire Mueller. And Rod Rosenstein said, I will never fire Mueller unless he's done something wrong, which he has not done so yet.
And Trump has been ticked off at Rosenstein ever since he appointed Mueller, because as I'm reading in Fire and Fury, because I'm still enjoying that book, maybe it's all fiction. I don't know, but it's really good.
Because farm is in our name.
That just start happening? That happened to you too.
Wow.
Yeah. A few times.
I just heard it once.
That was the Russians, by the way.
Maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe it's Trump. It's probably more likely Trump.
Ghost in the board.
He doesn't want us talking about this. Yeah. So Rosenstein gets that job and then just goes ahead and appoints Mueller. Kind of blindsiding Trump is what I read. And they were furious about why did he do this. Does that sound accurate?
Yes.
So he's been looking for a way I would think, to get back at him or to find a way to fire him ever since then.
Right,
probably,
even though
right?
Trump is the one who appointed Rosenstein in the first place, as well right. as appointing Jeff Sessions, as well as appointing Christopher Wray at the FBI. Trump is mad at all the people he appointed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of the history of Donald Trump, though, right? I mean, he demands loyalty, and you're either for him or you're against him. So if there's any perceived slight, it seems like he's going to turn on you, right?
Well, and another interesting twist, too, you have the resignation today of Rachel Brand, who was the number three person
at
DOJ.
That's a big deal.
So if
Rosenstein was fired, it then falls to Rachel Brand.
Interesting.
So then who's next after that?
Somebody, Noel something yeah. the guy who seems to be much more of a partisan Republican loyalist. Than the either Rachel Brand or Rosenstein, who were Republicans, but
professionals. Yes.
Do we know why Rachel Brand resigned?
She got a great job at Walmart.
For real?
Yeah, she's a Walmart greeter.
No.
I think she got the job as general counsel at Walmart.
And do we read anything into that? Like Walmart's trying to help Trump out by getting her out of the way, so the next person in line, or
so that is a theory. Now Ben Wittes from Lawfare blog was on Rachel Maddow's show, and he is also a friend of Rachel Brand's, and he said, look, there really is nothing to read into this. It's just a great opportunity, and so she's taking the opportunity.
But that employee discount. You
can't. Yes, exactly. But it's also, I think that the what I had been hearing is that she has ambitions to become a federal judge or to become some other kind of appointee. And if she suddenly becomes the person in the hot seat, her reputation is going to be destroyed.
Well, would it be fair to assume that most of the people in government jobs right now at that higher level are looking at Plan B?
How do you not?
No, I mean, I mean,
some people are like, man, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to, you know, the Bannons of the world who want this power and see this as an opportunity. But for most professionals, as you call them, who want to be part of government, who want to serve, they got to be looking around going, oh, my God, if I'm involved in this, this is going to ruin me. Right.
Yes. Anybody who has integrity.
Whew. So we get rid of the people with integrity. It's a really good way to go.
All right. So let's talk about the Democrat memo. What is the Democrat memo now that we're fighting to get released?
We don't know.
Well, the Democratic memo supposedly provides all the context that the Republican memo left out.
I see.
So, for example, the Republicans in their memo didn't bother to mention that Carter Page has been under surveillance by the federal government since 2013 when he was recruited to be an agent by Russian agents. So that was not in the Republican memo. It isn't supposedly in the Democratic memo. So that, in other words, I mean, frankly, the fact that the Republicans built this whole memo thing on the back of Carter Page, who's one, seems to be a freak, and two, clearly is a Russian guy, Russian-loving guy, and literally wrote a letter in which he said, I am an advisor to the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a dumb move on their part. So the Democratic memo puts context around it. One of the many things that they supposedly did not explain in the Republican memo was that, although they, in fact, they claimed that the FBI withheld the information that this was a political document, the Steele dossier was a political document.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic memo says, no, actually, it was disclosed in footnote 27 or whatever it is, that, in fact, the Steele dossier came from political sources. And so there's a lot of context like that. And it's a 10-page document, and Trump decided that it should not be released.
So Trump okayed the release of the Republican memo without any alterations. But I'm reading that he's saying this would have to be altered, or there's stuff that's top secret here that needs to be left behind. Do we believe that's purely partisan? Is there any reason to think that maybe there's something in there that they have a legitimate reason to block?
Yeah, there could absolutely be classified information. There was classified information in the
right, which
Republican
he decided
memo,
could be
which
declassified.
He decided was fine. Right.
Is there any reason to believe there's information in this letter that it makes sense that they not release?
I have no idea.
Right. But by his track record, we wouldn't think that's the issue.
So, and they haven't said if they need to sanitize it or anything. You know, I mean, they could cut some information out.
Theoretically, you could redact and release.
Correct.
And the Republican memo, Democrats were against releasing. Correct.
Right.
Was there a vote on this, and then it goes to Trump? How does this work? With this
yes, there was, they did vote. And they voted, and the majority voted to release it, and the majority were Republicans.
And for this memo.
For this memo, interestingly, the Republicans on the committee, because they had taken so much heat at the because they were being very partisan. It was a unanimous vote to release it, but then it gets sent to the White House where the White House can kill it.
So there was a unanimous vote to release this memo that the White House
to
was blocking
the White House.
Democratic memo.
Correct.
Out of committee.
Out of committee.
Okay.
The committee voted.
Would they have voted unanimously knowing the president was going to block it anyway? So
yeah,
it
probably.
Looks as though that
yeah.
they... Yeah.
It's like when it's the games that you play. In fact, this
both
frequently
sides
happens.
Play it, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Both okay. sides play it. Frequently happens in Springfield where the House will vote something out, knowing full well the Senate would block
right.
it, and vice versa.
Right. Okay. So, is there any reason to put that much into the? I don't understand the whole idea of these memos because the country is on one side or the other. Right. I mean, you're either going to believe Trump and the administration or you're not, it seems like. So why are we putting so much effort into these stupid memos?
Well, again, the theory was that Trump and the Republicans were putting so much effort into their memo because they thought it was going to be a blockbuster. Now, remember, Trump promised to release it during the State of the Union as he was walking out the door. People were saying, are you going to release the memo? Are you going to release the memo? And he was saying, yes, 100%, I'm releasing the memo. He had never read it. So he didn't know. He was led to believe this was going to be the blockbuster of all blockbusters.
Right.
And so when it came out and everybody read it and everybody was like, that's it? Mm. Which was, by the way, exactly what my reaction was when
were
I read
Republicans
it.
Were like, saying
really?
The same
that's
thing,
it?
Though? Or were the, was the far, I know Fox News was making
some
a big
Republicans
deal.
Were saying the same thing.
I think a lot of people said that.
Yeah. A lot of Republican
there was
senators.
Nothing,
there
was
wasn't much
to
there.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really weak.
Okay. All right.
And not only was it weak, but it actually contained one little nugget. So they kept saying that the Carter Page the Carter Page thing was a disaster, and the FBI had corrupted the process, and therefore any intelligence or anything that came after that was what's called the fruit of the poisonous tree. And they kept saying fruit of the poisonous tree. Therefore, you got to throw out the Mueller investigation. Mueller should be fired. This is what Sean Hannity said. Mm. The problem was that in the Republican memo, it said that, in fact, the investigation, the FBI investigation, began not because of Carter Page, but because of George Papadopoulos months earlier.
Right.
So, oops.
Where, do you guys see any end in sight to the Mueller investigation?
No.
Or do you think, where do you think, what would your best guess be on where that's headed right now? Do you think this is sort of like the Ken Starr investigation that started on one thing and then all these other doors opened up and it went a whole different direction?
I think that's possible. Don't you think?
I think you could. There's clearly he's looking into financial crimes.
Right.
And there's a suspicion that he's looking into money laundering of Donald Trump and, frankly, Jared Kushner. There's a lot of things he could be looking at. We don't know. And here's the interesting thing. Until the day that George Papadopoulos pled guilty, nobody had any clue that George Papadopoulos was the center of this investigation.
Yeah.
So we just don't know what's really going on with Mueller.
Yeah, I think it could definitely open doors to other things, or he could come back with a number of different recommendations to the Congress.
Yeah, he could. He could recommend indictments. He could do all kinds of things. I suspect there are going to be additional indictments coming down probably within the next couple of months because that's the pace that he's been operating.
All right, so you say recommendations to Congress. He got Papadopoulos to cop a deal. What are Mueller's powers? If he found that Trump had committed some heinous act, what can he do? Can he only recommend things to Congress? Can he have warrants filed? Can he have people arrested?
So this is the $99 billion question, which is can you indict a sitting president? And there are arguments that have been made on both sides. During the Ken Starr investigation, he got a memo written that said you can indict a sitting president.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably more legal scholars would say you can't indict a sitting right. president. So it's an open question. It's never gone to the Supreme Court. Nobody right. knows.
So if that ever were to happen, it would probably go to the Supreme Court.
Unless Trump disbanded the Supreme Court.
Can he fire them?
But
not legally.
In some ways, though, that's why it's better if he were to take it to the Congress, make yeah. the recommendations, put it in their hands, and especially if it's in the House, those members are going to hear from their constituents, even those who are potentially supporting him now or being supportive of him now.
But Congress cannot have him arrested, right? They can impeach him. But if you go to Congress, that's an avenue for impeachment that's separate than if there was a perceived criminal act that should result in an arrest, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And impeachment is actually a political process.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not a legal process.
Right. So what would happen? So if the president were indicted, and this would be the other thing, you know that he would try to pardon himself right away, right? And that would have to go to the Supreme Court, I would think.
There's an open question about that, too, because the president can pardon himself. The theory is that the president can pardon himself, but you can only pardon yourself for certain things. And then once you've pardoned yourself, you can't pardon yourself for other things. Like, so, for example, if you pardon Papadopoulos, just to randomly pick something, Papadopoulos then is fine from those crimes, but he could then get called before Congress and have to testify. And if he lies under oath, he's committed perjury.
Okay.
And you're not pardoned for the perjury.
Okay.
You only get one get out of jail free card.
Right.
But assuming, so could he pardon himself and stay in office? I guess there would be immense pressure, I would think, to resign, even from the Republicans, to be threatened with impeachment or resignation. But then if he resigned, you would assume that Pence would immediately or be there for a certain amount of time to pardon him from anything else. And could Pence pardon him if he pardoned him from one thing and then they said, okay, well, we're going after you with this. Could Pence then say, yeah, I'm pardoning him for that one, too?
You know, man, I'm pretty sure we're pretty far down the rabbit hole.
I know, but it's fun. Come on, let's figure this out.
And that's a lot of public pressure to overcome as well.
Be a lot of public pressure.
And the members
you would
of Congress in the House that are elected, every 2 years, they're going to be under immense pressure to either go against him, especially if there's so much pressure and the overwhelming evidence that he's committed some sort of crime. Otherwise, they stand to lose their own election. And the thing that these folks care about more than anything is winning their own reelection.
Right. But remind me, because the Bill Clinton thing was a long time ago now. How does the impeachment work? It's House and Senate or just
the
House?
The House impeaches, the Senate
confirms.
The Senate does the trial.
Sure. So the House could impeach because this looks better. And then the Senate could, not come through with the confirmation of it.
Right. Yeah. So the House impeached Bill Clinton, but he was acquitted in the Senate.
Right.
And the expectation is that there's no way in the world that you're going to have enough votes to convict the president, even if the House becomes Democrat in November. And I always hate to disabuse my liberal friends who have this fantasy that Donald Trump gets indicted or, sorry, gets impeached and convicted. Because even if he gets impeached, he's not getting convicted. You need 67 votes.
Oh, in the Senate, you need 67 for an impeachment.
67 votes to convict.
So it's not happening unless something so grave gets found out and brought against him people say we have to do
this. And let's not forget that Bill Clinton, the wide public perception was that it was an overreach of a Republican Congress that they impeached him. And the net result was one of the rare times in the sixth year of a presidential term where the president's party in power, or the president's party, won more seats, not fewer seats. Normally the president loses seats. So
in 96.
Yeah, in 98.
98, sorry.
Yeah. And let's face it, Democrats don't want him impeached anyways. They want him right where he is, right? They don't want Pence in power. They want these midterms. They want the next election. They want Trump in office.
They want the midterms, but frankly, I think that Democrats are, by and large, completely freaked out on an almost daily basis on everything the president is doing wrong, and they would gladly sacrifice the political, have Trump there just to get rid of him because he scares the living hell out of all of us.
So you do believe that the Democrats, and I don't believe this, would put the fear of Pence running a better organization and doing better and them gaining seats versus having Trump in there and Democrats gain more power?
Because it's an open question whether that would happen. I mean, look, I think Democrats, a lot of Democrats are very fearful of, Trump going to war with North Korea or God knows what. And I think that they perceive him as being able to do more damage to the world.
I've got to let you guys go and get to news. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say an impeachment trial does a lot of damage as well, though. I mean, it is a real strain on our country and our position in the world.
Can we strain it more than we have, really? Would an impeachment trial be more straining than just this presidency?
Yeah, we can strain more.
But I don't think an impeachment trial does that necessarily. I think maybe it helps our standing in the world that, hey, while things are real crazy, the American people aren't all on board on the crazy train.
Well, it depends on the outcome as well, though.
That's true. That's true. By the way, so I got to let you guys go. I'm late for the news. Thank you so much for jumping down. But mentioning Korea, Kim Jong-un looking brilliant right now in my mind, looking brilliant. His sister's at the game. She's shaking hands with the South Korean president. He's got a nuke. He did everything right.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did. I don't want to give praise to a madman, but he did everything you need to do to keep a standing in the world.
And
I know he's starving his people and doing all these things.
He just invited the president of South Korea to Pyongyang for talks.
Amazing. Very interesting to see where that goes. Guys, thank you so much for jumping downstairs.
Thanks,
I really
Matt.
Appreciate it.
Thank
Roger,
you
I'm sorry we're late for the
that.
News. Let's get it to you. Here's the headline. Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thank you so much to the crew from the Patty Vasquez Show from hanging around a little bit later to talk about that memo and try and educate me about everything that's going on in the world. We'll get back to Kim Jong-un in a couple of minutes. And I will say this. I'm looking in the Tribune. So when we're talking about how Trump is not declassifying the Democratic memo, the White House informed, this is from the Tribune, notified the House Intelligence Committee that President Donald Trump is unable to declassify a memo drafted by Democrats that counters GOP allegations about abuse of government. White House Counsel Don McGahn said in a letter to the committee that the memo contains, quote, numerous properly classified and especially sensitive passages, unquote, and asked the intelligence panel to revise the memo with the help of the Justice Department. He said Trump is still, quote, inclined to release the memo in the interest of transparency if revisions are made. So they will go back, play with the memo, try to see what he didn't want in there, and then see if they can still get it released. So we'll see. Maybe this memo still will get released. Maybe it won't.
It'll be heavily redacted.
Could be. I mean, President Trump released the other memo without redacting anything. So if they revise the memo and take out the parts that he says were especially sensitive, now, if what they take out is all the good stuff,
right,
the Democrats will publicly say it's not worthwhile because he wants all the parts that refute this.
And then he'll come back and say, see, there was nothing in the memo.
He will. They say in this Tribune article that Trump has been saying the Republican memo vindicates him in the Mueller
right.
investigation.
That's what he claimed.
I think
he's
the only one saying that for the most part.
But he is the president, so he can.
He is. That's his thing to say. That's true. He can. Yeah. He can say that. And you know he will say that. coming up after the 3 o'clock news, our friend Andrew Wittenberg, who's a reporter for a Salt Lake NBC station, I believe, is at the Olympics. So we'll check in with him and see what's going on. And I do want to, I won't make Andrew comment on this, but so, Raj, did you get to see any of the opening ceremonies last night?
No.
You were napping
I spent most
to work,
of the
right?
day shoveling.
Oh, did you really?
And leaving very early.
Oh.
To make sure I got here.
You know what you need is a couple of preteens to get out there and do that.
Yeah,
I've got a few of those
all the
in my
preteens
house. Awesome.
In the area stayed inside. There were none to be found. Yeah. But I did find an older gentleman who had a snowblower.
Nice. That's
and,
a good friend to have.
Took about 3 hours of shoveling time out of my hands, and that was very beneficial.
I'll bet it was.
Yeah.
Tommy was out, I think, at 8 o'clock this morning, a snowblower in hand. He did our driveway and a couple of neighbors. He was living for this.
Excellent. He made out pretty good, didn't he?
He doesn't charge the neighbor.
Really?
Because we have a couple of elderly neighbors. Sometimes they give him money, but he's not out there.
Yeah.
Now, he does market himself to everybody else in the neighborhood.
Okay.
But we have a senior neighbor next door and then a woman down, a couple of doors down whose husband died a couple of years ago. So he takes care of her good.
That's nice.
He's a good young man.
Yeah.
Yes, it is adorable. Thank you, Jess. Tommy was out measuring, and I think he said we got between 6 and 10 inches out in Dundee. I'm not sure exactly what we had, but I had to go clean the vent of the dryer vent. You know, when we were kids, Roger, the dryer vent outside the house was just like a little plastic thing that hung over a big hole. Maybe it had a flap in it so that it
right.
couldn't
keep
go
the
in.
Air out. Yeah,
but for the most part, I never remember that clogging once in my life. We had our siding redone a couple of years ago, and now that thing clogs like crazy, and it drives me nuts because it has three flaps that open when it's blowing out the dryer, but it's got like a waffle pattern of plastic, sort of like a screen. Before it gets to those.
Oh.
And so the stuff catches on there like crazy, and it will back up. And I know when it's happened, when we do a load in the dryer, and then after the 40 minutes, it's still wet.
Is it easily accessible to clean?
Well, I got to walk through the snow into the backyard and get out back by the air conditioner, which isn't that big of a deal, but in a foot of snow it is.
Right, right.
And then I got to pull the thing off the wall and then scrape it all out with my fingers and shove it back on.
That doesn't sound like a decent system.
Well, it's a pain in the butt. I keep thinking I should cut some of these pieces and make this a little easier. But then I don't want a mouse ending up in that thing either. So I don't know what to do, and I don't know why. When we were growing up, it was a much simpler system. You know, I don't know. Did we not worry as much about wildlife? Do I live in a more rural area? Is it just bad design? I don't know. I don't know what to think.
Well, I grew up in the city with that, and I just remember it was just a little metal tube that stuck out from the wall.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Which had a little cover on it or something.
No.
Right?
It was nothing? Like curved downwards, right. I think. And now, there might have been a trap or a door or a flap inside that I didn't see, but I don't remember anything like that.
Here's the other thing that we have. So we have a tankless water heater, which I love. It takes up these houses, when they were built, we have in our master bath, we have a ridiculous jacuzzi tub, which literally could probably fit four people, which was awesome when the triplets were little, because all three of them took a bath in there and had plenty of room, could play and everything. It was great.
Sure.
Now nobody uses it at all. And if we ever can afford to redo our bathroom, the thing will go. But because of that, we have an 80-gallon water tank. Does that sound big, right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, okay. So it was huge. It was a monster water tank.
Yeah.
And when we went to a tankless water heater, I mean, we bought back 5 feet of space in the furnace room. I mean, literally, it's awesome. I have shelves and stuff stored in a place where I never could have before, because the water tank's on the wall, and you have to leave some space for that, but it's great. And then that vents outdoors, and because you have to have a vent for air to come in, a vent for air to go out. So we got two big vents going outdoors.
Okay.
And one of them has a metal, or they probably both do, but it has a metal grate in there so nothing can come in.
Okay.
But I don't know if we get wind drafts in this corner where the house is or what, but we had an issue earlier this year when we had those really cold nights where the water heater was shutting down. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at the code, and then I looked it up online, and it was a blocked vent.
Oh.
So I turn it off. I go outside, and I got to crouch down in the snow in this weird corner and look up inside this thing, and there's a metal grate that has very thin holes. It's like bigger than your screen on your windows, but not much bigger than that. About the size you could stick maybe the end of a metal hanger through, the tip of a metal hanger.
Kind of that mesh from a window screen?
Had a pattern of that.
Okay.
And snow had kind of gotten up in there, or moisture, and then refrozen because of the cold air. I imagine. Now this is air coming in, so I don't know why, but moisture had frozen there. So I'm sitting there with a piece of wire trying to poke holes in this thing until I could get enough air to come in and it would work. And I did that, and I had to do that a couple times this winter. That's a pain in the butt too.
Man.
And I'm sitting there debating, okay, if I I really thought about doing this and hopefully lose.
Well,
this
how about
thing. I debated
bringing
the hair dryer out there and running.
That's what I was just
going to
say. But I was just thinking, do they have a battery operated hair dryer?
That's a good question.
You know, they have the battery-operated drills and everything.
Hair dryers take up so much energy. Don't forget, when you click the hair dryer on, the lights usually flicker a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know that a battery-powered one is easy to use. But I debated that. But then you're so, like, nervous. I don't know if you are, but I grew up so, like, I think we really ingrained in our brains in the old days a healthy fear of hair dryers and bathtubs and water and anything.
Well, James Bond comes to mind. That was the electric fan he kicked into the tub.
There have been movies, though, or things, you're right, where people, you know, drop the hair dryer into the bath, and then that's how they kill somebody. So I don't know. I was kind of like, you know, a lighter, do I do that? Or is that bad? Is there gases going in and out of here? I just didn't know. You know, I don't want to blow up the house. I don't want to be that guy.
I don't remember being worried about using a hair dryer. But then again, I was totally clueless when I was younger. It hasn't changed much over the years.
And you have not much. Sorry.
Well, now I don't, but I did. I had to, in college.
Did you have a beautiful mane?
Oh, I had to blow dry, and I had the round brush with the bristles on it.
Did you have it hanging out of your back pocket in your jeans back in your days?
What, the brush? Yeah. No. But I did have comb. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten what those are now. I'd like to say that I could, like, you know, shake my head and the hair falls into place, but there's nothing to fall into place.
Yeah.
So
that happens.
I did in college. I spent half an hour in front of that mirror.
Did you load really? You were that guy? Come on, Roger, let's go. Hold on.
Yeah, no.
Hold on,
and then
guys.
I had my handlebar mustache that I had to wax.
God. In college?
Yes. That was my nickname.
Roger.
Stash. Not because of what I had in the dresser drawers, but because of my mustache.
I doubt that was the only nickname, sir. Pain in my ass was the other one.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, you're sitting there pimping your hair for half an hour and then waxing your stash before anybody can go anywhere. I guarantee you they wanted to kill you.
We're good. The bar's going to be closed, Banish. Come on. Let's go.
Come on, stash. The ladies are waiting.
Oh, yes, sirree, Babaroonie.
Well, I don't even know what we were talking about at this point.
Well, you were talking about the vents and you were worried about going out in the snow, and the kids were getting rid of the snow. And
yes, they did.
They had a good time, and then you overslept a little bit, but you still got here in time.
I couldn't believe I did that. And I remember Jack in my room, because I set the alarm for midnight. I jump up, take a shower, try to get out the door by 12:15, get down around 1. I go to Black Dog. I check the mail because I've been there a few days, et cetera, et cetera.
All right.
And I know I had my alarm set for – and the problem – I think the problem was I went to bed earlier than normal.
Oh.
We're watching the opening ceremonies, me and Anna, because the boys are at baseball, and Jack was down at a friend's house. Colleen's asleep on the couch, and I'm watching with Anna, and I fall asleep. And I'm falling asleep at 8:15, so I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go up to bed and get a really good nap before I go.
Right.
So I set my alarm for midnight. I don't know what happened with that. I assume it went off, and I turned it off. I remember my son Jack in my room saying, Dad, you've got to get up and get going. And I'm like, no, I've got like 20 minutes. I'm fine. He's like, I remember being like, are you sure? Are you sure? I think you have to get up and go. I'm like, Jack, no, it's this. And I'm explaining to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing I know, I look at my my phone, it says 12:56. Mm. And I thought, 12:56? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It jumped up.
I've had days like that.
Yeah.
Or night,
I
whatever.
Think we all have
at
some point.
Sure. Right. But you were probably feeling very relaxed.
I guess. But I remember it taking me a while to fall asleep, like a really long while.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating when you get up there and you're so excited to get some good sleep and then you can't just.
And you feel rushed because, I got to get this in now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know. I slept. Yesterday, in between the shoveling and getting my salads ready and everything, I slept an hour extra in the morning, my mid-morning nap, and then about an hour and a half evening before I got, and I left earlier than I usually do. I got in here about 7:30, and I usually get in around 8:30, quarter to 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're.
Not because of the roads, because I knew they were going to be clear because I'd already seen pictures of them and our mayor does not want to get caught with roads not clear.
Not in an election year.
No, and so my only concern was our alley, and which we don't have anyone to plow that section of the alley. Some of the other buildings down the alley do. And they came through and cleared those parts because there's parking lots behind a lot of the buildings. But we don't have anyone to do ours, so that's why I got the guy with the snowblower to clean out behind our car, the car next to us, and part of the alley. And then I came out twice after that, once to actually clean the cars off and then shovel that out of the way. And then some more snow had fallen, and I wanted to make sure that there weren't any more ruts in the alley, so I started shoveling that out.
Yeah.
And I did okay. I got out okay, and everything was fine. So my only concern now is not today, but tomorrow, because I have a short turnaround between leaving here and then getting back here on Sunday.
Right.
And we're supposed to have more snow on Sunday.
Yeah, can you go over that again for a minute, Roger? I know you've been saying that we're supposed to get snow today, we're supposed to get snow tonight and on Sunday, or what's going on?
I thought this
was one big blast and then we're done.
No. It's coming in sections. So what we've got coming in right now, actually, you can see it on the radar. It's covered the entire northern part of Illinois. And up into Wisconsin. It's a weird shape. But there are sections that have broken off and that are just south of the main section. But that main section, which looks very slow moving right now, is heading towards us. And that stretches all the way back into Kansas, northern Kansas, and southeastern Nebraska. Then, if you look further back around Cheyenne, Wyoming, there's more forming there. And that part is coming in Sunday. So here's, again, what we're looking at. We've got snow this morning that'll end around 9 o'clock this morning. That could be an extra 1 to 2 inches. Then tonight after midnight, another 1 to 2 inches for a system that should end by noon on Sunday. Then the sun comes out until we get more snow next weekend.
Is it not until next weekend that we're predicted to get
more? Yeah, we should be okay. In fact, we even have rain in the forecast, I think, on Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So have they said this was whatever the snowfall ends up being, and it's different in different areas.
Sure.
But this is our biggest snow event since when? Our biggest, like, one time, 2015, well, Jess says.
Well, it's not 3 years one ago? Time.
Well,
I mean, it's
no,
three but, systems.
No, but the 10, the 6 to 10 to 14, whatever we got
in
this big one-time dump that we had Friday, Thursday night into Friday afternoon. Jess says she thought she read 2015. I feel like it's been a while. It's
yeah,
been a long
been,
time.
It's been a few years.
We had one big dump all
right.
at once.
Because last year we had kind of, we didn't really have a lot of snow as far as I remember.
A few it was a nice winters in a row, winter. I feel like we haven't had a ton.
Yeah.
Of
But, and again, the first snowfall we had yesterday, there were some parts of the area that only got about 5 inches. Then there's an, another couple of areas that got 13 inches.
Yeah.
So it was extremely varied over a wide range. And so that's why it's kind of hard to just give one
total.
Yeah, total forecast. Like, you're going to get 2 inches. Well, maybe not.
Yeah,
you know, so it's that's why I'm a little concerned about this system that's coming in now. It keeps breaking apart as it comes towards us. Mm-hmm. It's not staying solid in the front end, and so little patches are breaking off, and so some people are going to get snow, and some people aren't going to see anything. So I don't want to sound like an alarmist or anything, but you know, this system is coming in. In fact, you can our listeners can look at this. It's at WGNTV.com. It's the interactive weather radar map.
But either way, whatever comes, it's going to be in 1 to 2 inch increments.
Approximately,
so nobody's going to get slammed with something they can't kind of dig out of a little bit at a time.
No, and it's going to be for a long period. I mean, we're talking, what did I say,
through
from now till about 9?
Mm-hmm.
So about, well, about 6 hours coming up soon.
And then again tonight.
And then again tonight after midnight, and that's about a 12-hour segment that we're expecting snow. And again, this could change over time.
Right.
You know, it depends on what forms.
Right.
So we have gotten the heavy snow warning. We just got that about a half an hour ago from the National Weather Service.
Oh, okay.
For all the different counties that I've listed before. And I hate going through them all, but, you know, it's some will get it and some won't.
Well, let's catch up on spots here. We got the news coming up in a couple of minutes. Raj will revisit that then. And after the news, we'll check in with our friend Andrew Wittenberg. He's live in Seoul, Korea. He's not in Seoul. Seoul was the Summer Olympics back in 88. He's live in Pyeongchang for the Winter Olympics. That's coming up, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, 15 hours and many time zones away is our friend Andrew Wittenberg, a reporter for KSL in Salt Lake City. He is live from Pyeongchang at the Olympics. Hey, Andrew, how are you this morning?
Hey, what's going on? We're missing the snow. You guys got all the snow in Chicago.
We got a ton of snow in Chicago. It's funny, as I've watched the first shots of the Olympics, the other day before the opening ceremonies, I saw some downhill skiing, and it looked like, from an aerial shot at first, that the slopes were full of snow and nothing else was full of snow. But then yesterday, as I was watching leading up to the games, it looked like there was snow on the mountains. What's the snow factor there right now?
Snow factor is this. It's an area that gets less than 100 inches of snow a year, so every bit of snow that you're seeing, mostly anyway, is man-made. Not like what we have out in Utah, for instance, which is, you know, we get a lot of the fresh powder, as they say. They get about 98 inches of snow here a year, which, you know, is not a ton for a mountain town, a mountain area. And so they do man-made snow here. Snow guns everywhere on all the ski resorts. And it's great conditions, but it's just it's man-made.
When you say all the ski resorts there, were there ski resorts in South Korea before the idea of the Olympic Games? Did people regularly go skiing, or is that something that is just for this Olympics?
No, there are ski resorts here. It's just not like what you would see in, say, a Vail, Colorado, or Salt Lake, Park City, Utah. There's not the frequency of the resorts, you might say. There's a handful. The venue where most of the alpine events are taking place is called Yongpyeong Alpine Center, and it's actually the oldest ski resort in South Korea, and I believe it's something like 50 years old. So it's been around for a long time here, not just for the games, but yeah, again, man-made snow. And we actually got to go up skiing on Wednesday and get up there and see what it was like and meet with some of the USA ski team, the Team USA folks, and get a look at it and the conditions. And it's actually really nice. It was very, very bitterly cold. The wind is just oppressive and constant. But yeah, not too bad as far as it wasn't super icy like you might see in New England or something when it's bitterly cold like that. Mm-hmm.
I was reading a story, I think on Yahoo, that this is the coldest Olympic Winter Games since, I think, Lillehammer. They were saying that the cold is so bad that it's warping the skis, that a lot of these very expensive skis being used will be thrown away after they're used because the snow is crystallizing on the skis or something like that. Has that been a story out there?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we heard that in the first training sessions when it was so very cold, single digits, and the wind chill, again, just pretty oppressive, that the snow being man-made, when it gets hot, it doesn't really turn into water or like a slush. It just crystallizes, and it was actually cutting into some of the skis, and as people who follow any sort of competitive skiing or have actually even been skiing themselves know, you know, that the wax surface on the bottom of those skis is pretty crucial just for any skier, but certainly at a competitive level, it's crucial. And so, yeah, they were tossing some skis out as of their training runs. Now, it's warmed up a little bit now, so I don't think that's going to be a problem for the competition, which gets underway tomorrow. But, yeah, overall, they were having to toss some skis because it would just burn into the actual surface of the ski.
That's so fascinating. You think the Winter Olympics, it's cold and we have everything figured out, but I guess there's some things that are going to make a difference for these guys. Tell me about, so real quick, the time change. Is it 6 o'clock at night, 6:12 at night, where, right now there?
It is right now. 6:12 p.m., yes, okay. On, where are we, Saturday night now, yes.
So you are 15 hours ahead of us. And
yeah,
so,
correct. 15 hours ahead of Central Time.
So while we just watched the opening ceremonies here a few hours ago, that was an entire day ago that happened.
Yeah, about this time last night, I think they started at 8 o'clock p.m. local time on Friday night.
Okay.
So yeah, just almost 24 hours ago. So they're on tape delay. They were on tape delay in the States, but they aired live across all time zones in the U.S., just the way that NBC hammered it out for these games.
Interesting. And did you attend the opening ceremonies, or where were you?
We did. We were outside of the stadium. We were doing live shots for our Friday morning show on KSL there in Salt Lake, and it just so happened to coincide with the time that it was going on during the opening ceremonies, our morning show. And so we were doing live shots outside the stadium. You can't go live inside any venue at the Olympics, so we were just outside, but a great spectacle. We could see into the stadium. It's an open-air stadium, and we could see some of the festivities. Pretty cool, and certainly the fireworks that everybody could see overhead on the telecast were really impressive.
They really were. Now, I had to take a nap last night, so I just watched about half an hour or so of it, but I got to see the fireworks at the end of the Parade of Nations, and they looked amazing. And they even had the fireworks spell out welcome, which I thought was so cool that they did that. I read a headline in USA Today that there was supposed to be a drone light show that got scrapped because of technical difficulties. Do you know what happened there?
I don't. We heard that. There was some stuff that was going on in the air, and we saw some drones up, but apparently there was supposed to be something that was going to be fairly impressive, but again, it was super windy last night. I don't know if that had anything necessarily to do with the technical issues, but you know, the opening ceremony is down to a science. I mean, these guys plan this out by the second, and there's not really a whole lot of a margin for error. So if anything looks like it's going to be scrapped, they probably you know, have a good idea of what they're going to do as a plan B and, you know, what's going to happen if they can't. So it didn't, you know, seem to us that anything was amiss, but we had heard that there was something else that had been planned initially that didn't come off as they maybe perhaps initially planned.
We're speaking with Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City. He is live in Pyeongchang watching the Winter Olympics and attending the events and reporting on it for his station back there in Utah. How cold was it at the opening ceremony? You said it started around 8 o'clock local time. We know it's a cold winter there. How bad was it when the game, when that show started, and how tough was that to be outdoors for everybody?
Oh, it was chilly, man, because, you know, the morning shows are 2.5 hours long, and boy, it was quite cold. Actually, it warmed up yesterday, so it wasn't as bitter as it had been. We got up to 40 degrees yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And so it wasn't terrible, but again, that wind really causes some problems. I would say probably around opening ceremony time, probably in the neighborhood of 25, 27 degrees.
That could be worse,
with a pretty,
right?
Yeah. Pretty stiff breeze. Yeah. The first couple days we were here, though, man, it was absolutely bone chilling. Single digits in the early morning and late night, and then maybe a high of 15 to 20 in the middle of the afternoon, and just that wind just takes it right out of you.
So from everything I've seen on the NBC coverage so far, it looks like, and I haven't gotten to see a ton yet because, like I said, I didn't nap last night, but it looks beautiful. It looks like everything looks really cool. How well prepared were they? Is everything, you know, we remember Sochi and the brown water running through the faucets and things like that. Does Korea have it, you know, really well together for the start of this?
Yeah, seemingly an altogether different story than we saw. Even in Rio in 2016, which I was there, and there were a number of problems with venues that weren't completed, just differing infrastructure problems with transportation within that city. This is altogether different. The venues look great. Everything's completed. There aren't like construction crews milling around trying to put stuff together at the last minute. Everything seems to be running fairly fluid, and it's efficient. You know, the bus system is pretty efficient. But I will say, too, I mean, you're talking about the difference between in Rio, a huge mega city, and an area here in South Korea that's relatively small by population. So that could help. I wasn't in Sochi, but of course, yeah, everybody heard about the problems there. Doesn't seem to be having any sort of major issues, albeit, you know, just here a day or so into the games just yet.
The last time South Korea had the Olympics was 88, and they were in Seoul, which I'm assuming is a much larger metropolitan city. Pyeongchang, I know nothing about it, but it seems like a smaller area. How is the infrastructure there? Is everything, do you believe, you know, does it seem like, well, everything was built up for these games? Sochi was nothing until they built the, from what I remember, until they built the Olympics around that town. Pyeongchang, was it, is it a big town? Is it a small city that they just put Olympics in? How would you characterize it?
Yeah, I would say it's probably a fairly small town, like you would see maybe a suburb of Chicago or something like that. It's not huge. There's not like a big skyline or anything. I would say there's just a couple of taller buildings in the sort of downtown area. But what's interesting is there are sort of two venue clusters, like in Sochi, where there's the mountain cluster and the coastal cluster. And the coastal venues are down in actually a separate town called Gangyang, which is a fairly large city on the eastern coast of South Korea. And that's where the media village is, where everybody's staying, where things like hockey and figure skating, curling, all of those sort of indoor arena sports are taking place. So it's kind of actually taking place in two cities. But Pyeongchang is relatively small. I would say not much bigger than 50, 75,000, maybe 100,000 people grand total. This is a pretty nice area as far as the city goes. It's beautiful, well-kept, very clean. It's certainly a city, but this is a little different than also Rio and Sochi in that these venues are anticipated anyway to stay long after the games. Many of the venues that were built in Sochi were torn down immediately after. Same thing in Rio, or they were in incredible disrepair right after the games. This seems to have a little bit better infrastructure surrounding the actual venues to where they will actually be used following the games.
And so you're staying, how far away, how far from Pyeongchang is the other village where games are going on?
25 miles, maybe 20 miles, something like that.
So not that bad. So is transportation easy back and forth?
Yeah, fairly. You know, there's at every Olympics, there's a really intense, if anyone's ever been to an Olympics, maybe 96 in Chicago or some, or in Atlanta.
Oh, don't taunt us. Don't taunt us with the Olympics we didn't get. The 2016 Olympics would have been in Chicago.
Right, yeah. Well, you guys pulled out or just didn't get it right ahead of Rio.
We got dropped out in the first vote. And then, you know, it came to light that that I believe there was some dirty politics involved, which you'd think Chicago would figure out how to play well with. You'd think that, you know,
Chicago,
if there's dirty politics,
that, right?
We should have won that. That's a big failure on our part.
You know, no, I mean, yeah, transportation's pretty good. It's a smaller city, but there is a fairly, you know, like I say, and this is purely from a media perspective now. I mean, there are spectators. It's probably an entirely different story. But there is an intense bus system that goes from venue to venue, from cluster to cluster, from hotel and media village to the International Broadcast Center. It's pretty dialed in, and it seems like it's the same as it was in Rio, but the problem in Rio is just the infrastructure, the road system, the sheer magnitude of people that caused so much of a problem for the transportation. Here, that has not been the case. It's been pretty punctual and fairly reliable so far. We've been here almost a week now, so it seems like we're getting a handle on everything, and they certainly do too.
What's been the biggest adjustment being in Korea now for a week? As an American coming to Korea, what do you say, like, wow, this is different?
The temperatures were definitely sort of a shock. We've had a really warm winter in Utah, and I mean, I think it was like 60 degrees today in Utah, and sunny and beautiful, and you know, people are out playing golf, and it's like spring weather almost. And here, I mean, it has been fairly unrelenting with the cold. That was the first impression, was just how cold and windy it was. Of course, folks in Chicago know a lot about wind, of course, but that was pretty big shock. Secondly, is just how nice the people are. I mean, they are incredibly welcoming as a people. I mean, it's just great. Not to say that they weren't in Rio, but just incredibly hospitable, very nice. The South Koreans love Americans. They love the Olympics. They're very excited. And for all that's been made with, you know, North and South Korea and all the relations and stuff, it has seemingly not dampened their enthusiasm at all.
Is the language barrier difficult? Do many people in South Korea speak English?
Yeah, fair amount. Most of the volunteers do, which is great because that'll help us get around to different places. But yeah, if we were just sort of out on our own, you know, showed up, flew into Seoul and had to get here on our own without any sort of assistance, yeah, it would definitely be a language barrier for sure. But again, they're so nice and hospitable. It's just been kind of great because they're very helpful. And it's like, well, if, you know, they can tell that there's a language barrier, they'll find somebody who speaks English to help us get where we need to go. So that's been really nice. But most of the volunteers who are South Korean do speak English. So that has been helpful in pointing us in the right direction, too.
Excellent. So you mentioned the relationship with North Korea. I wonder how much is being made of it there, because here in the U.S., where we just played the video of the opening games, there was a lot of talk. So the South Korean president shook the hand of Kim Jong-un's sister, who was attending and was there in the box with everybody. Mike Pence was sitting, I believe, a row in front and two people over from her. And I had read he avoided shaking her hand. What is being made of those relations over there?
It's definitely a topic of conversation. I would not say it dominates the day. There is very much an awareness as far as the media goes of what's going on with those two countries. But it hasn't risen to the level here of being, I guess, the big story, you might say. Even though last night, during the opening ceremony, it was very noticeable, you might say, that there was something going on between North and South Korea, that the sister had been here, the first time a member of Kim Jong-un's family had been to South Korea, the interesting geopolitical side with Mike Pence being here. It was interesting. That was the first time we had seen anything or had an observation, you might say, that there was something going on bigger than the games. That being said, back to today, it was seemingly back to normal and competition underway on the Saturday here, of course, on your Friday. It didn't seem to be a massive issue. Of course, I think the bigger indication of what transpires here will come after in the weeks leading up to it. So the breaking news that we just saw about an hour or two ago was that Kim Jong-un had invited the South Korean president Moon Jae-in to North Korea for a meeting after the Olympics. And, you know, that's pretty big news for an area that doesn't have a lot of conversation. And we actually got to go on a tour of the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, last week. And, you know, it's a very contentious space, that 2.5 mile wide strip of land between North and South Korea, where there are soldiers facing each other, soldiers on one side from South Korea facing the soldiers from North Korea, pretty intense stuff. And so that is seemingly maybe a nice aspect that there could be a break in the tension a little bit. I mean, who knows? I mean, this is 50, 60 years in the making, but we heard coming into this that with South Korea, you know, people were asking a lot of Americans, well, what about the games and the tensions there? Are you worried about going over there? But the South Koreans have dealt with this level of tension for 60 plus years. Yeah. And so in a way, they're sort of used to it, which is kind of odd to say, but maybe a little bit of break in that tension. Who knows?
It's going to be interesting to follow that as well as the game. So last question, is there a game you're looking forward to? What are you attending in the next couple of days that you're really excited about?
Well, we actually just talked about hoping to get to the USA-Canada gold medal women's hockey game, if that makes it to that point. That's always a great game. If they both make it to the gold medal game, women's hockey, it's so interesting. They know each other so well. That'll be a big one to watch. And then for us in Utah, a lot of our alpine, our skiers, that'll be great. I think we've got and then figure skating, of course. Nathan Chin, he's from Salt Lake City. Favorite to medal with all the quadruple jumps. We'll be watching him for sure next week as he goes into the individual competition.
Yeah, he had trouble in the team competition in the short program. Yeah. We watched that here on Thursday night, and we're so sad. It's so hard to watch these skaters fall, and you know he's doing something nobody's ever done before in the Olympics, so it's so exciting. So we're hoping for the best for him. Andrew, hold on for a second. Talk to Jess. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate the update.
All right, man. We'll see you soon.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City, Utah. He's in Pyeongchang for the Olympics. Hopefully, we'll check in with him again. We've got news next, 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN. How are you, everybody? Roger says more snow in the forecast, although only an inch or two at a time, so it won't overwhelm you. But you will need to be doing some more shoveling, it sounds like, before the weekend is over. Raj, is that pretty widespread, or is it south of I-80, north of I-80?
This one that's coming in now, mainly north of I-80, is what we're looking at once the main part of it gets over here. Again, this one's a slow-moving one. I'm still looking at the radar, and every time I check, it's like, well, geez, it hasn't moved. But it's on its way. Again, there's parts that have been broken off southward. Joliet's getting some right now. There's some down at Kankakee, has gone over into Indiana. The upper part has now covered the entire northern part of the state, also in southern Wisconsin, all the way in Madison. Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, Zion is getting snow now. Princeton in Illinois getting snow. DeKalb, Rockford, McHenry, Algonquin. So it's slowly making its way eastward. And then it's going to be around for a little while.
Okay. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, everybody, I'm going to be filling in for Brian Noonan on Sunday night. When do you work on Sunday, Raj? Will you be there?
Right when you start at 6 o'clock, big guy.
I'm starting at 3.
Oh, that's right.
Brian's
well, I
show
start
is
at
now
six.
3 to 7.
Yeah, that's right. I keep old habits are hard to break.
Yes, they are.
All right, so I will be in from 6 to 7 with you.
Okay, well, that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
We'll all be reunited because Jess is going to produce for me on Sunday.
Oh, wonderful.
So we'll have some fun then.
Yes, we will.
And hopefully Andrew Wittenberg will actually jump back on the phone with us. It'll be early morning there, but he might jump on the phone for a few minutes to give us a latest update. One story I didn't want to bring up with Andrew because I really like Andrew. Andrew's a great guy. I just don't know Andrew that well. So I don't know where can I take him with these stories. And let's face it. He's a reporter in Salt Lake City, Utah, which is much more conservative, right?
Okay.
And so the story about Tinder and the athletes. Now, Tinder, Roger, are you aware of Tinder? Do you know what Tinder is?
I have heard about Tinder. I know that you swipe on Tinder.
You do swipe.
Is that right?
You swipe one
correct?
Way if you like somebody and the other way if you don't.
Yeah.
Tinder
I'm not
is basically a Tinder. Just the, well, you shouldn't be as a married gentleman.
Thank you.
Tinder is the most, what do we say, just the most basic of dating sites. It's you like how they look, you don't, you swipe. I mean, kind of, right? I mean, It's certainly not Match.com. It's not eHarmony.
It's very superficial.
Oh, wait. Turn your mic on, Jess. You're going to have to comment on this one now.
Yes.
What were you starting to say? Plenty of fish in the sea?
Don't forget plenty of fish.
What is that?
What's that?
Is that
it's another, it's like a Tinder.
That's a new app called Plenty of Fish?
I don't think it's new, but it's there.
And is that the same type of thing? Is it? Because Tinder is really thought of as a hookup site, not as like a find your mate site or find your marriage material site, right? Is it amongst your generation, your young generation, is that how it's viewed?
Well, I've never been on Tinder, but my girlfriends that have used Tinder, they just kind of use it as like a fun pastime, I guess.
They're not finding a husband there. They're not thinking, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I think Plenty of Fish is somewhat along that line as well.
A hookup site more?
Yeah, hookup / dating, I guess.
Okay. So there's a story about how many athletes are on Tinder in Pyeongchang, and apparently there's a lot of them. And the other story is how many condoms. This is always a story every year with the Olympics, or every 4 years or 2 years with the Olympics. How many condoms are being freely distributed to the athletes? And the report I read was about 110,000, I think, to the athletes at the Winter Games here, which they're saying equates to about 37 per athlete.
What?
Which means you barely have time for your event if you're going to be using
that
much.
No time for your event.
Okay, so 110,000, they said, which pales in comparison to, I believe I read, the 450,000 that were given out at the Brazil Games.
Oh, God.
Which I guess makes more sense, because Brazil, I guess you think of as a place, I mean, Pyeongchang doesn't seem like a real sexy place to be. Plus, you're freezing your butt off, so maybe you're just not, you know, getting, or maybe you got to stay warmer, I don't know. But Brazil, everybody's half naked anyways, and they're thinking, okay, we better have a lot of these available.
It's just wrong. All right, call me old school.
Gotta be safe. Gotta be
yes,
protected.
But still,
it's not like they're saying go use them. It's
come
just
on, people.
If you need
focus,
them.
You're there for one thing.
Yeah, but
win the game.
Yeah, but you participate in your game, and then you got a lot of free time.
Then get your butt home and go to work.
Why can't they stay for the closing ceremony they prepared for all these years?
Nobody stays for the closing ceremonies. They're there for the opening ceremonies, whoop-de-doo, and then boom, go.
Well, boy, crotchety old no fun.
Well,
get
no, if you look
lawn.
At the if you look at the closing ceremonies, half of the athletes have already gone home.
Well,
seriously,
sure, because they're wiped out from using all those condoms. They're tired, Raj. Or they use all those condoms, and now there's 12 different people that are seeing them on the streets like, hey, you never called. And they're like, God, I got to get the hell out of here.
And
I'm
now
not staying for the closing
Jess
ceremonies.
Should be playing the song with Lily von Stoop. I'm tired.
I guarantee
now.
You Jess has no idea what Lily von Stoop is, and neither do I.
Oh, come on.
I've never heard of Lily von
Blazing Stoop. Saddles?
I've seen Blazing
you what?
Saddles. I've seen Blazing Saddles. I don't know if I've watched it beginning to end.
Okay. It's a song she sings. Madeline
Was
Kahn.
That Madeline? God, yeah. I love Madeline Kahn.
She is so
God bless Madeline Kahn.
Yeah.
She's passed, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, she had cancer.
Unfortunately.
Right? Yeah. Loved Madeline Kahn. Yeah. History of the World Part 1, my favorite Mel Brooks movie.
This one, she's very good in this.
She's very good in everything.
Yeah.
All right, so lots of condoms being passed out at the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you got to stay warm. It's cold out there.
Yeah, got to stay covered.
Absolutely. And that's what they're helping them do, Roger. You're terrible. All right, so I want to jump back to Kim Jong-un. His sister is at the Games.
Right.
She came with the Korean delegation. The Korean delegation, I believe, I was just reading, marched in under one flag.
Yes.
I believe they do that for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's hope that maybe that now.
Well, because it's a joint team, the hockey team is a combination of North and South.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
It's the women's hockey team.
Okay.
It's a combination of North and South players.
So that's all interesting that they're, you know, so divided, so much rhetoric, so much bluster from the North, and then they come together every 4 years for these, or every 2 years if they participate in these games. It's neat. And so Kim Jong-un's sister is attending the games with the North Korean delegation.
Mm-hmm.
She sat in the, you know, in the box. If you watch the opening ceremonies at all, the South Korean president and the head of the International Olympic Committee come in together, are introduced, and he comes in, the South Korean president, very smiling, waving, shaking hands with everybody in the box, shook hands with the sister of Kim Jong-un, which I thought was a good moment. Mm-hmm. We had read that Vice President Mike Pence was going to avoid her and not shake hands. Have you read a story about that at all? He did avoid her.
Yes. Okay. Even though he was standing in the
right
row
next
right
to
in
her.
Front of
not
no,
far
in front
at
of
all.
Her.
Not far at all, though.
He was in the row right in front of her.
With the way.
He could have turned around to his right and shook hands.
Yeah.
That's how close.
Yeah. It would not have been hard.
No.
But he did not.
He just kept his eyes forward.
And so I wonder, was that, you know, it's an interesting question. Was that a message told to, you know, how?
Well, I think he was under orders to do that.
Well, I would imagine they talked about that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they had to say, well, you know, but I don't know when they knew that she would be there. I didn't read. I knew that.
Oh, I bet you they knew. I bet you they knew.
But I wonder how far in advance they knew that.
Through back channels, I bet they knew days in advance that she was not going to be gone.
Very maybe.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about that is, so Vice President Pence, whenever he's anywhere here in the U.S., mm-hmm. I would imagine is surrounded by Secret Service.
Of course, he's the vice president.
So I wonder how that works overseas. When you're there, mm-hmm. I mean, he's there in a group of international leaders.
Right.
The Secret Service, I imagine, is not able to be right next to him right there.
Well, he was in a secure box with other world leaders.
It's not that secure. It's a wide open box, and the rest of the stadium's right there. I mean, I'm just saying.
I understand.
It's not that secure.
They're not
going
to be standing in front of him the open window
box. But I don't think they could even sit right next to him or anything like that.
But they were there by the door, and I bet you they were out of the frame of the pictures.
I imagine they weren't that far away.
No,
but I imagine it's also very difficult for the Secret Service to handle these situations, and very stressful for them when they're on international soil mm-hmm. and they just don't have the leeway to do whatever they want as they would here in the U.S.
Exactly.
It's got to be very taxing mm-hmm. on the personnel that are with him.
Yeah, but it's nothing new. I mean, it's been going on for decades and decades. You know, the Secret Service has gone with presidents, vice presidents around the world. I bet you even Secretary of State has their own detail.
I'm sure they do, but they're not often in a stadium of 60,000 people.
Not often.
Where they have to not, you know. Imagine how crazy it drove the Secret Service. I imagine it did. At the 2002 Olympic Games in Salt Lake,
mm-hmm.
I remember famously, George W. Bush went and sat with the athletes when they opened the ceremonies.
Yeah.
You remember that? He was in the crowd with the athletes.
Yeah.
And it was an awesome American moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine the Secret Service is like, gosh darn it, what are you doing?
All right. So let me just throw this out there.
Please.
Okay. When I worked at City Hall for Harold Washington and Jane Byrne, part of my job was an advance man. So we would get an event on the schedule several weeks out. I would have to, often with one of the security guards, plainclothes officers that would go with the mayor, we would go out to the location that the event would be at, and we'd case the joint, literally. We would look at all the entrances, all the exits. We would look at the travel route by walking or parking or driving. We would go to where the event would actually take place, who would be there, all the people, not only who would be on the dais or in front of the mic with them, but also the people attending, how many would be attending, who would be speaking, what would the order be, what would be asked of the mayor to say, is it just a ribbon cutting, do I need prepared remarks? It was an extremely detailed event that I then would have to go back to the office and type up and make multiple copies of that to send to the security detail, the person carrying the mayor's coat, the press office, the secretary's office, the driver. Who would drive the mayor. Everybody involved would get a copy of this. And so the Secret Service, he didn't have Secret Service, the security detail would know exactly what would need to be happening. And then either I, since it was my event, or somebody else in the office would then be the person directing all this at the event. So security detail was involved in every public thing. So what I'm getting at is I will lay you odds that President Bush's sitting with the athletes was planned.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. I'm
perfectly
sure you're right.
Planned,
but I'm
to
sure
the
it
minute
still
and the place.
Drove the of detail course. Crazy because here he is in an open air stadium,
right,
sitting with athletes, and he didn't have Secret Service surrounding him. They had to back off a little bit, certainly at least for the optics, if not for the comfort of the other athletes. So, you know, and I'm sure that that stadium, especially a year after 9/11, was on serious lockdown and that, the, you know, they were very careful. But it still has to drive, you know, you imagine this, the Secret Service doesn't like ever taking any chances with anything.
I will make you another bet that amongst that group of athletes that he sat with.
A couple of Secret Service agents
look
like athletes.
You bet your Bippy dressed up as athletes.
You bet your Bippy. I don't like to bet my Bippy.
Sorry, it's
now, so
a laughing.
So, Rod,
reference.
You guys are doing all of that for the mayor of Chicago. Now, Chicago is a huge American city and a global city, but that is amazing to think about that a level of detail for a mayor of a city.
That's right.
Were there often threats against the mayor where it was like, we have to take this seriously, or is that just standard protocol?
Every day there were threats against both Jane Byrne and Harold Washington. Wow. Those were handled by the police department and the security detail. Mm-hmm. We did not see those up in the press office. We often would book an event and find out from the security detail that we either had to cut it short, that we couldn't do what the group we were going to wanted us to. We would have to do it in a different location. Other things that the security detail would tell us that would let us know that they have concerns. So that was an everyday occurrence that was going on. And plus, you've got to understand, Jane Byrne was the anti-Democratic organization mayor.
Sure.
And Harold
Washington.
She had
Washington, a lot of enemies. And Harold Washington was the first black mayor.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah. So you can understand the level of concern.
Was there ever a credible threat against her life that you knew of while you were working with either of them?
Not that I knew of.
Yeah.
Nothing like, hey guys, you know, we've just received this. We've got evidence
of
this
and that. No event was ever canceled because of it or anything
no,
like that.
No.
And this is a weird question, but Anton Cermak, was he the one that was assassinated while somebody was taking a shot at
right, he was hit by accident. Mm-hmm. And it was in Florida.
It wasn't here?
No. No, Cermak, it was in a parade.
Was that an attempt on Cleveland?
I believe it was, if I will get the details.
And now the keyboard comes out, and Roger...
Anton Cermak, assassination attempt, 1933. Wow, he was born in the Czech Republic. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Okay, Roger. So while shaking hands with President-elect Franklin Roosevelt at Bayfront Park in Miami, Florida... So I told you, he was shot in the lung, mortally wounded, when Giuseppe Zangara, who at the time was believed to have been engaged in an attempt to assassinate Roosevelt, hit Cermak instead.
I don't know why I had Cleveland in my head. But.
Yeah, at the critical moment, Lillian Cross, a woman standing near Zangara, hit Zangara's arm with her purse and spoiled his aim. He also hit four other people, one of whom, Mabel Gill, also died of her injuries.
How neat that a woman... save the president from being assassinated by whipping her purse at the guy's arm as he's pulling out a gun. That's some quick thinking.
And apparently, according to his testimony, Zangara said that he hated rich and powerful people, but not Roosevelt personally, just hated that he was rich and powerful.
Okay.
That was his reason for wanting to shoot him.
Well, that's terrible, but interesting piece of history. But that was not here in Chicago.
No, Florida.
And why was Cermak in Florida?
He was there with the president.
Interesting.
The guy gets around. He's mayor of Chicago. You know
what
I'm saying?
Back in the day, it wasn't easy to get down to Florida. 32, oh, that was probably a two-day train ride, don't you think?
That's all right. Well, it's a fancy-looking train car.
Things need to be done.
Yeah, he's from Chicago. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And then, after the news at the top of the hour, we have several things to talk about. One, I want to get back to Kim Jong-un, because I said this to Patty's gang earlier when they were in. I think he has been, as terrible as it is to say this, has he not made all the right moves to give North Korea a standing in the world they would have never had otherwise? We'll talk about that. This Is Us. Roger, do you watch This Is Us?
I do not.
They finally officially killed off the father. I'm not spoiling anything because you knew from like episode two years ago that the father of triplets dies. I've been upset about this ever since I found this out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Father of triplets, they kill the guy.
Was he sick?
Well, so for about a year and a half. So This Is Us is a very fascinating show, Roger. It goes back and forth in time all the time.
Oh.
In the first episode, you see that they're, I think it was the first episode, that they're having babies. They're having triplets. We found out they're having triplets.
Mm-hmm.
And we think it's current day the entire time until they deliver the babies. And then the dad is outside looking through the glass at the babies through the window.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy next to him is a fireman, lights up a cigarette right there. And you're kind of you're looking at this like, what the hell is that guy?
Yeah.
Now, I will say my wife, Colleen, called it early in the show
because
of stuff. It was interesting because of stuff she saw in the delivery room.
She's like,
this isn't current day.
Yeah,
and
it's
I forget what she saw.
Yeah.
But they did a really good job of not really letting you in on that. Then you see this guy smoking and you're like, what the hell is going on there? He can't smoke there because it's a fireman, too. And then they pan back and you see like, that it's the 70s. You see everything. It's really cool. And so then the show takes place when these kids are born and young, when these kids are teenagers, and now these kids as adults.
Wow.
It's all over the place. And it's incredibly well written. It's very emotional. But we find out like two or three episodes in that in the current day, the dad's not around anymore. The mom's remarried to the dad's old best friend. And I almost quit the show right then and there. I was so mad when I see the present day mom show up with this other guy at the house. I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And then we find out the dad had died. And then they dragged it out for a couple of years to figure out how the dad was going to die. They finally, after the Super Bowl, officially show us how he died.
Oh, jeez. But what I understand from the show is what nights is it on? What
Tuesday
night?
Nights normally. It was Tuesday on after the Super Bowl special.
Okay, well,
episode.
But Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. So after Tuesday, because you know I have nothing to do with my time but stay on Twitter all night long. But it always seems like Twitter is filled, Twitter and Facebook, filled with the wrenching of hearts and the tons of Kleenex that is used by people who watch this show because apparently it is so emotional, more so than any other TV show ever in the history of broadcasting.
I don't know if that is true, but
it sounds like it.
It is very emotional. There are people I know who have quit watching because they felt like this is not why I watch TV. I don't need to feel like this. I sometimes just get fed up and yell at the characters because there's some that I'm very annoyed with. I'll explain why after the news.
Okay.
And one of our former producers here did something very funny after they finally killed off the husband. I'll let you know what that is after the news. Quick break, news, and then we're back at it here on 720 WGN. Thank you, Mr. Badish. So snow is falling in the Chicago area yet again, if you're not sick of it. They've got a little bobcat going on out here on Pioneer Court. Roger, when we started the show a couple hours ago now, a big semi-truck dropped off a huge, I don't know, what's that called? What's that called, Jess? What did they just?
A big dumpster.
A big dumpster outside on Michigan Avenue, and there is a little bobcat going around scooping up the snow and dropping it in the dumpster.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, how much snow was I didn't even look because I came in through the
There's
the
pretty good piles
level.
Out there on Pioneer Court. You know, they had to shovel it and clean up for people to walk through, so there's
yeah,
piles
right,
here.
Right.
But they're trying to get that all cleaned up. I don't know if there's some event there this weekend, and that's particularly why they're doing it so much. Raj, were there any stories? So I remember a couple months ago when we had our first snowfall, there were stories that this beautiful new Apple store that's right here on the river, it was built very aesthetically beautiful, but they said the roof wasn't really built to handle the snow.
Right.
I don't know if it was sliding off because they're sloped edges.
Well, the icicles were forming on it. That was the problem, and they were dropping on people.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
So we haven't had another story. I see a big layer of snow on top of the Apple Store roof. But
well, they haven't flipped the lid yet to turn on the computer. So that's
why. Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. Just sorry.
So this is us last week.
Yes.
They killed off Jack Knight of the Super Bowl. And then 2 days later, they had their usual Tuesday episode where we deal with the aftermath. And it's a really good show. It really is. It's frustrating at times. So frustrating as heck, sad as heck, all these things. Not a lot of just laughing joyfulness, but sometimes there is.
It's life, isn't it?
It's a little more real than it needs to be.
Right.
There are a lot of lighter moments in our lives. It's not always so serious. We're not always making the wrong decision. Which for some of these characters seems to be all they do.
Okay.
So that's frustrating. But it's good. It's really good. Right. But so, you know, as you know, you said that, you know, when you watch Twitter or Facebook after this these episodes air, people are all, upset
God.
And writing all these things.
Oh, you'd think the end of the world.
So Kurt Vanderaw, who was a longtime producer of the Kathy and Judy show here at WGN Radio, who I'm still good friends with, he sent a text. So, myself and Audrey Clark, who was Bob Collins' last producer, and Kurt and Tracy Hoovelman, who was Spike's longtime producer, we all get together a few times a year and hang out and reminisce, and we've stayed really close friends over the years.
Good.
And so Kurt sent all of us a text the other day that just showed a picture. He sent his wife some flowers. What a sweetheart he is.
Okay.
What a good husband that Kurt Vanderaw is. He sent us a picture of the card that came with the flowers to his beloved wife. The card said, "I'm sorry for your loss, but please remember, Jack isn't real. Love, your husband."
Oh, my. So what he was trying to say is that his wife has taken this program just a tad bit seriously?
I'm guessing she was a little upset.
Just a little upset?
About the passing of Jack on the show This Is Us.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
He was such a wise man. He sent his wife flowers.
It's sweet.
Reminding her she actually has a husband who's in the house, does love her,
hale and hearty.
Died.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while you're weeping all these tears for the fictional character, who, by the way, here's another frustrating part of this show. The guy they killed was the greatest husband of all time.
Of course. Of course he was.
Of all time. Tragically flawed, yet always did the right thing, the best thing, took care of the family. I mean, there was no better human ever than Jack from This Is Us. No mortal will ever live up to what this man was. He died... because when the house burned down...
I heard about the fire, yeah.
He ran back in to save the dog.
Oh, no.
And all of the family's photo albums.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm crying already.
Now, what's interesting about this, so the big twist, and I'm sorry if you haven't watched it yet, and you're saving on your DVR, you're out of time. I'm sorry. They've played another episode since then, so we're just talking about it.
Get with it, people.
Yeah. So, you know, we knew I think this whole season, Roger, I can't remember when, we knew that he dies in a fire.
Right.
Or at least we assumed because we found out that there was a fire and then the wife was crying. So we'd seen like little scenes of it.
Okay.
We knew the house burned up.
Right.
So we didn't know what happened, how it happened. First of all, a couple weeks ago, they show us that the way the house is going to burn down is by crock pot.
Oh.
Which I believe I read a story afterwards that the crockpot people weren't real thrilled with that.
I would imagine.
And
that.
We're releasing stories that crockpots will not burn down your house.
Yeah.
So they show this whole story about how this elderly couple that lived by them were moving away and they had to clear out the house. So he gives them the old crockpot and says, "Hey, the button's a little tricky. You got to play with it a little bit, but it's a good crockpot." So they've been using this crockpot for years. One night he turns it off and then it kind of shorts out and starts a fire. It didn't seem particularly realistic to me, but what do I know?
Yeah.
But the crockpot people can't be thrilled with it.
No.
So we know he dies by crockpot. But we assume he just somehow dies in the fire.
Dies by crockpot.
He dies by
fire.
Crock
okay.
No, die by crockpot. I like that better. Death by crockpot. Dilly dilly.
Dilly.
So we know he's going to die by crockpot. And we assume, you know, he's just going to die in the fire. We don't know what's going to happen. But of course they make it that it goes back in. First he saves the whole family.
Right.
I mean, you know, running across the hall through the flames, getting everybody out, the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's on the roof. He's got everybody down. The daughter starts screaming about the dog. He goes back in. And then you're thinking, oh my God, he bit it in there. He didn't survive this. He comes walking out with
the dog. Of course, there's that delay. Like, you think he hasn't made it.
He's gone.
And suddenly, through the flames.
Here he comes.
He's got the dog.
Got the dog. Got all the photo albums.
Right.
He's got every precious thing the family ever owned somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. I survived. Little burn on my hand. And they, you know, the kids are fine. We take him to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fine there.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, and now by this point in time, this show is set, I guess, in the early 90s. It's 20 years ago. Well, yeah, it's 20 years ago right now. So what would that be? It would be 98?
Yeah.
It's set in 90. God, is that possible?
Well, when were the kids born?
It's set in 98. The kids turned 36 when the show started. Well, here's what happened.
I'm confused already.
So they had current. This is the interesting thing they did, kind of the technically amazing thing they did. The episode that aired after the Super Bowl is set on Super Bowl Sunday. The Super Bowl was the greatest thing in Jack's life.
Okay.
And so every year on the Super Bowl, it's very traumatic for their kids, and who are now adults. And I believe when the show started last year, they turned 36 years old. It was their birthday, and they turned 36. So it's 20 years ago. Was what they were saying as this Super Bowl aired and the show was on afterwards. They were saying on the show, it's been 20 years since my dad died.
In the fire.
In the fire.
Okay.
On Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh.
This is the 20th Super Bowl since.
Okay, okay.
By the way, Kurt Vanderaw also posted, I will say, pretty witty. He said, well, this is us finally made me cry.
Oh.
They were talking about the Super Bowl 20 years ago when the Packers lost. That's why I cried. So it's 1998. I believe Kurt actually attended that Super Bowl, by the way. It's 1998.
Okay. So then 20 years would have been 1978.
No. 20 years now. Now.
No.
2018. 2018. Keep up with me, Roger. 20 years ago, Dad died in the fire. The kids were 16. Now they're 36. Anyways.
Well, no, wait a minute.
Oh, my God.
If it's 20 years.
98 to now.
It would have been
20 years 80. Ago, right?
Yeah, no. 20 years. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, now.
Wasn't good in math.
1998, he survives the fire. He's got some burns on his hand. They go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They check out his hand. They say, now you inhaled a lot of smoke.
Right.
So we're going to keep you here for observation.
Okay. Sounds logical.
Yes. And then she goes out to get a candy bar and he dies. Literally.
Whoa.
He has a widowmaker heart attack, she's told, because of the smoke inhalation.
Right.
Now, I don't know where the show's really going to go from here because they keep going back and forth in time. So we'll deal more with what happened at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't help but thinking, A, just 20 years ago, if somebody suffers severe smoke inhalation, aren't they on oxygen? Aren't they doing a bunch of tests?
They should have been.
At the time that we had this technology, right?
Yeah.
So that seems odd to me. Also, I haven't heard one thing yet about a lawsuit against that hospital because you got to think here in America, even 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything.
Well, why would you sue them?
Because we're in America.
All right, that's true.
And when somebody dies and we feel like it shouldn't have happened, we sue their pants off.
Yeah, that's true.
And let's face it, our medical system is, you know, the biggest expense they have is malpractice insurance, right?
Right.
So I would assume that, he was in a fire, we knew he'd inhaled a lot of smoke, and then he's just sitting here and dies. How did we not, there were weren't tests.
But he had a heart attack.
Because of the smoke inhalation, they said.
Or maybe he was just prone to a heart attack.
I guess that could be, but they made it sound like. But, you know, if you have severe smoke inhalation, don't they do a bunch of stuff?
When you have a severe smoke inhalation, you're coughing up black soot. having been in it before.
Well, I didn't hear any of that in the show, but I was curious about that.
It doesn't sound like it was realistic, but maybe, and he would have been gasping.
Not.
He would have been gasping.
And he wasn't gasping that bad.
Okay.
So we'll see if they deal more with that as the show goes on. But the whole time I'm thinking, well, that's a big lawsuit, because clearly this is what we would do.
Maybe that's part of the story.
A lawyer would talk to you and say, we're going to sue the pants off of them because they treated him wrong.
Right.
Now, maybe there will be a – who knows? I don't know if they'll deal with that in the show or not. Texter says there's a whiteout in Marengo. Whiteout in Marengo.
Yep. I can fully understand that. Marengo.
I want to tell you about one other show I'm watching.
Okay. Which one?
Did you ever watch Breaking Bad?
Nope.
Okay. Is that available on Prime?
I believe it is.
So that is well worth your time to start watching.
Okay.
I did that a couple years ago. Bryan Cranston. It was multiple Emmy Award winning, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. Really interesting. About a high school biology teacher or some type of science teacher who has cancer. He knows he feels he's going to die. He's going to leave his family broke. And he's desperate to make some money to support them. He has a special needs son. And he somehow falls in with one of his ex-students making meth and cooking up
right.
meth.
Okay.
And because he's a scientist, he can make the best damn meth you've ever seen. I mean, I'm serious. They're like, the drug dealers have never seen meth like this. He's the most popular, you know, he's legendary now.
Right.
And so it's a whole show about him avoiding the law and fighting cancer and his family and everything else. And it's really well done. It's really fascinating. After that show ended, they developed a spinoff show.
Calling Saul or
Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul, yeah.
Based on the guy who ended up being his lawyer in Breaking Bad.
Oh, that's who that was. Okay.
Yeah. But this is set back in time. This is all
before he became
events.
A dealer.
Yes. So Bryan Cranston, the guy from Breaking Bad, isn't in this at all. I don't know if he'll ever appear in it, but this is about this lawyer well before he met him.
Mm-hmm.
And his family and his life and how he became the lawyer he was. And it's done really, really well. And it's I just have enjoyed it so much. Michael McKean, Lenny.
Yeah, from Lenny and Squiggly. Yeah, right.
Who also has a food show out. God, I forget what it's called. But he has a food show on the Food Network, I think. And he's really good in it. There's a lot of really great acting and really well written.
Mm.
And it's just fascinating. And so I'm on the treadmill and I'm putting an episode on. I'm trying to stay on the treadmill throughout an episode.
Oh, okay. And, well, that's a good 30 minutes, right? How long is the show?
About 48.
An hour?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's really good and really worth your time. But you don't have to watch Breaking Bad first, but I think it makes sense to watch Breaking Bad.
I'm really kind of decompressing. Is that the word? Because I just watched all 156 episodes of The West Wing.
Did you really?
Yep.
All 156?
Yep. Took me a total of, because, you know, without the commercials and all that stuff, and I fast through the opening credits because, you know, who cares?
Great opening song. Though.
Right. So a little over 6 hours of TV time spread out over, I think, a couple of months that I did it.
Wait, what do you mean a little over 6 hours?
Well, the 156 episodes at about 44 minutes, 42 minutes each. And then when
add up to 6 hours.
Yeah, it does.
What?
Yeah.
How you can't condense 156 episodes into 6 hours.
What did I when I did the computation on it?
Well, 42 minutes, oh. Roger. The first 8 episodes will take you 6 hours.
No. Now, well, how did I do?
You did it wrong.
No,
I'll tell you
I
that.
Didn't.
60 hours, maybe.
Maybe that.
Really
maybe it was.
Forwarding?
Yes. All right. 60 hours. I'm sorry. I told you I wasn't good at math. Stop it.
You weren't lying.
Leave me alone.
You said 156?
156 episodes times 42. You got your computer out there?
Yeah, I'm you know what I'm doing, Roger?
What?
It's called math.
On the paper?
I'm
piece of paper?
The one.
You are? What else are you carrying? I got a lot of luggage. So 60 hours. You got to divide by 60. So maybe it was 60 hours. I knew it was 6 something. As Matt sharpens his number 2 pencil to get a nice point on it.
It's
so
over
100
hours, Roger.
No.
Yes, it is.
No.
Yes, it
is. I did the calculations.
You did them wrong.
All right.
Two times six is 12. Carry the one. Two times five is 10. Carry the one, 11. Two, three, 312.
Now divide by 60.
Hold on.
Oh,
I got to do the second row now.
Okay.
All four times six is 24.
Yeah. I can't see a thing you're doing,
four
by the way.
Four times five is 20. 22.
Dark as
two,
anything
four,
out
five,
there.
Six. 2556 6552
radio.
Divided by 60, that's 1. Drop the 5, 55, that's a 0. Drop the 2, that's 550. That would be 5. That's 105 hours.
Can't be 105.
Yes, it can.
Then I did it wrong.
You watched it wrong or you added wrong?
I computed wrong. What did she say? What did she say?
Jess is taunting me about my tax use, my taxes.
Getting all this practice from your taxes?
All right. I computed wrong. I'm wrong. How many hours?
105 hours.
All right. So then I watched 100 and whatever hours, whatever you say, I watched 156 episodes.
Now, other people are texting 109.2 hours. So
109.2? Then 109.2 hours.
Ooh, you just got trolled so bad on the text line.
I did?
Oh.
I told you I wasn't good. I failed algebra.
Those that can't do, teach.
I didn't teach math. I taught broadcasting. I can do broadcasting.
Well.
Thank you. Harumph, harumph, harumph.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Nasty people.
And those are my fans.
109.2 hours is what it took you, Raj. That's what
it took you. Which is why it took a couple of months. Because I didn't sit and binge watch back to back to back.
Let me ask you. So the first 2-3 years of The West Wing were incredible. And then there are a lot of character changes. People left. People came.
Yep.
I was often on the last couple seasons, I believe, of that.
I remember I was too.
Does it tail off a bit? Did you
not?
Feel?
No.
No.
No. It. There are some episodes that are like, okay, whatever. But you need those to bridge over to the remaining ones. Mm-hmm. And so watching them back to back like that, I stayed with it. In other words, I saw it in a completely different frame of mind than I did when it was week to week, and you didn't know what was going on because it was on Netflix, and when you go to the next episode, it gives a little description,
right?
You know, and so you could read that and go, oh, okay, then this is why this happened. Oh, we're jumping back to this now. This storyline is coming back. We haven't seen it before. Why haven't I seen that person in a couple of episodes? It's because of this, and now they've introduced that. And so all those things kind of, I remembered the older stuff, which helped me stay with the newer stuff. Because I was like you. I remember that I felt when it first ran on TV that the later years kind of just were, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But the election in the later years, Jimmy Smits being elected president, and the race and everything.
So wait, is Bartlett not even in office when the show ends? Do they have another administration?
Yes.
No kidding. I don't remember that.
You got to go back. It's like the whole last year was the new election.
Oh, wow.
And then how Bartlett and his people were trying to establish their legacy in the last year in office of what they could do. And then if you remember his chief of staff.
Bradley Whitford? No,
Bradley Whitford was the assistant chief of staff.
Okay, it was Toby?
No, Toby was the chief speechwriter.
Well, who the hell was the chief of staff?
Older gentleman.
Oh, that's right. Let Bartlett be Bartlett. He
right,
was still on?
Exactly.
Okay.
He, in the new election, they choose him to be vice presidential candidate. But he has recovered from a heart attack that he had.
And he's a recovering alcoholic. He's got a lot of baggage.
Right.
Okay.
And he's older.
Yeah.
Now, the problem was the actor who played him actually died halfway through.
In real life?
In real life.
I don't remember that at all.
And so in the show, on the election night, They find him in his hotel room.
Having died?
Having died.
Oh, all right, don't ruin the rest of it.
So now you're going to go watch it.
Maybe I will.
You got to.
It's, you know, I'd like to watch that with my 16-year-old son. I'd
Looking at the politics side and the government side.
Yeah.
It, first of all, since having worked in that for like 5 years,
yeah,
it hit home even more to me.
I'm sure.
And yeah, I stayed right through, and when it was over, 156 episodes, I'm like, I want more. I want to start watching it again.
Mm.
It really...
Well, and there's been talk about bringing that show back, I think, right? Every show that was ever successful right now, they're talking about bringing back.
They're bringing back
everything. The Office, they're talking about bringing back. Yeah. Roseanne, of course, is coming back. My son has started watching The Office. Did you ever watch The Office?
No, because I didn't care for it.
Well, if you didn't watch it, how do you know you didn't care for
it? I saw little bits of it.
Try it
well,
again.
You see,
try a couple episodes
I
again.
Just know inane people drive me nuts. I'm sorry. I can't stand it.
Colleen said today, that show was so good at making you feel uncomfortable.
And I don't like feeling uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable office moments. All right,
no.
We got to take a quick break. We got to do the news. Speaking of, I want to talk to me about trolling as a Twitter. Somebody texted a great Twitter troll at Roger.
What?
Is Melania trolling Donald Trump? You wouldn't believe who she's following on Twitter.
I know who she's following.
We'll talk about it after the news, which is next, 720 WGN. A texter from the 219 is yelling at me, Roger, that I just gave you a hard time saying don't ruin it on this, 10-year-old TV show. Meanwhile, I'm giving away everything from This Is Us from 3 years ago. Well, there's that. Fine. But for God's sakes, if you're not catching up with This Is Us, you just aren't doing it. And I was yelling at Roger not to ruin it for me. That's different.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin it for you because I want you to go back and watch it.
You still have to watch it, Jess, if you want to. This Is Us. But This Is Us, some people are just like, I don't need to deal with this. My life is miserable enough sometimes.
Well, see, and I don't like shows that are dysfunctional, even if they're trying to be funny. It just, I don't know, something just...
Have enough dysfunction in your own life you don't need to enjoy other people's.
Look under the dictionary under dysfunctional. My picture's there.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. All right. 4:32 in the morning. It's time for some headlines, Mr. Battish. Morning, everybody. All of you just jumping out of bed at 4:38 in the morning for God knows what reason. Maybe you got to go to work early on a Saturday. Maybe you just can't sleep. Either way, thanks for flipping the radio on and being with us here on 720 WGN. My name is Matt Bubala. We're here every Saturday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. Orion Samuelson and Max should be jumping on with the morning show in about 22 minutes. That's Roger Battish in your newsroom. Jess Rains is behind the glass. She'll answer the phone when you dial 312-981-7200. You can also use that as the text line to text into us some updates just like this from 312. Not snowing yet in Evanston. If somebody from every one of the 72 municipalities within our direct radio distance could text in and let us know if there's snow or no snow, then we'll just go back to an old school weather forecast center or emergency closing center, just like Bob Collins used to do about an hour and a half straight of Tom Peterson reading every school closing in the country.
It wouldn't just be Tom. They would switch off. There would be
people. That's right.
Then they would both take a break and come back like 5 minutes later, you know, and continue the list.
God, I remember Bob and Spike doing that. It was funny. We were talking about that just today at our house because all the kids had Friday off.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about the old days when you'd tune in the radio and, you know, and I remember Colleen was like, when we were kids, I'm like, when I worked there, we would do that.
Yeah.
In 97 to 2000, you know, emergency closing center. Here's the list. And we'd read it for... literally sometimes 45 minutes straight. That would be the whole morning or afternoon show sometimes.
And then if you tuned in at the wrong time...
Yeah, you missed it.
You missed your school because it was alphabetical.
Yeah.
And you'd have to wait till it came around again.
Wait again. The funny thing is, so I know that now our emergency closing center would include where I grew up in Munster, Indiana.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid... when I was young, we didn't tune into GN for that. We tuned into WJOB in Hammond. In
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and that's what we'd have to listen to find out if our school was closed.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
But now there's apps and there's websites, and I think we don't take an hour and a half to read every single thing that's closed.
Well, we tell you to go to our
emergency closing center
on our website.
Yeah.
Now,
it's not the old days.
I'm going to look at the map, and he said, whoever the texter was, said, no snow in Evanston. And I'm looking at radar map, and it's nothing but blue. And I'm not talking blue skies. I'm talking blue as in snow coverage in the entire North Shore region. So,
well, maybe the clouds are there, but the snow isn't falling.
Could
at
be,
the moment.
Could be, could be, could
it
be.
It should be on the way, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So, our good friend Melania Trump. Now, I will say this: Melania Trump is going to come out better than anybody when this administration is done. I firmly believe that. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what she'll do with that. I don't know that she'll want to do anything with that.
Right.
Because, you know, her English certainly isn't perfect. It's certainly passable. She's fine. Mm-hmm. But she has a relatively thick accent, I would say, right? We haven't heard her speak publicly very much at all in the first year of this presidency, have we?
Yeah, hardly anything.
So, you know, she's got her anti-bullying initiative, which has got to be a tough one to keep putting forward when you're married to that guy.
And she's got her clothing/jewelry line or something like that, or is that Ivanka?
Ivanka has all that. I don't know that Melania has any of that.
I wasn't sure.
Melania's pretty much raising Baron and trying to stay out of the limelight as much as she can, it seems like to me, which is, that's fine for her and good for her. But she's had to deal with a lot. You know, we got the Stormy Daniels nonsense and everything else going on. And somebody noticed, I don't know if it was Jimmy Kimmel or somebody else recently noticed, she had been only following 4 people on Twitter. She followed the official Twitter account of the president at POTUS.
Mm-hmm.
She was following at Real Donald Trump, his actual personal Twitter handle, which he has tweeted over like 40,000 times, I believe.
Wow.
And there is a tweet for absolutely every. It's amazing to me that anytime something happens, somebody will go back and find a tweet he sent from 4 years ago or 6 years ago or 8 years ago.
Right.
Where he said something about this type of thing.
Yeah.
For example, all these resignations now over assault and abuse by aides in the White House. 2 people have resigned within the last 48 hours over allegations they have abused women. There was a tweet he sent out like 3 or 4 years ago that said something like, if Rihanna starts dating Chris Brown again, she must have a death wish. Once a beater, always a beater. Now, I'm assuming he actually sent that. And sometimes when I read that somebody found this tweet, because people text, there's always a tweet, here's something he sent, I read it and go, now, did he really write that, or is somebody just photoshopping this crap now? Because how did he, has he commented on every single possible thing? But supposedly, I'm reading, and it's not on The Onion, so I'm assuming it's real, that he tweeted something about Rihanna getting back with Chris Brown, which why the hell was he commenting on that? He must have just loved, you know, just expounding upon any topic back in the day.
Right, right.
But he said, once a beater, always a beater. If he really said that, now he's saying, well, don't forget he's denying it. We have to take that into account, which is true. You do have to take that into account. But as president or as leadership, you should be saying these are disturbing allegations. We're going to do it. You know, if you want to defend him, if you want to give him a chance before you fire him, then come out and say these are very disturbing allegations. We're upset by them and we're looking into the matter and we're conducting a full investigation. Say that. Don't say, well, don't forget he's denying it and I wish him well. He's a great guy. That seems odd. It's an odd way to handle those things. Melania Trump has been following Donald Trump's 2 accounts, Vice President Pence, and Vice President Pence's wife, mother. I only call her that because that's what Saturday Night Live does. I don't know. Although I think he maybe does call her mother. I think we read that, right? I think he does do that.
That's so weird.
That always seemed weird to me. Yeah. People do that from certain areas, but that has always been
weird. Didn't Bush... Was it Bush who said mother, or maybe I'm thinking of an even older president?
Oh, God. I'm not sure. Right. I'm not sure. It definitely takes you back to psycho, though, when you hear somebody say that.
So weird you just said that.
So she followed those 4, and now people have noticed that there's one other Twitter account she is following, and that is Barack Obama's Twitter account.
Right. I saw that the other day and I freaked out.
Which, God bless her, that is just beautiful. if what you're putting up with is that he's paying off Stormy Daniels and he berates you or he doesn't act kind to you or he doesn't do anything nice or whatever else is going on in your personal lives, I don't know. And you can only do so much about anything. But what you can do to really piss off your husband is decide, you know what, I'm going to follow Barack Obama. You know that once he heard about that, he's got to be furious.
Well, maybe she was looking to see if...
she just accidentally hit a follow button?
No. If Barack Obama would post photos of his wife and see what kind of dresses she was wearing so she could get the same kind of dress.
Slamming on Melania because she plagiarized one speech. One speech she plagiarized.
And some of the dresses. All right.
She's wearing Michelle's dresses?
I think there. I remember a picture.
Well, maybe she's emulating her. I love Melania.
Well,
I'm just
but
gonna
wouldn't
say,
that also
I
be a slap?
Melania.
Wouldn't that also
love
be a
Melania.
Slap in the face of her husband if she's emulating
could be.
Former first lady?
Yes. Yes, I suppose it would be. I suppose it would be.
I'm just
Melania's you know. The sanest part of that White House.
I think you're right.
And she's been the most graceful.
For the simplest fact is she's not talking. She's the only one in that place that's keeping her mouth shut and not tweeting.
I think she's staying away from the insanity as best she can.
Yeah.
And it cannot be easy. So here's what's going to happen with the Kim Jong-un thing, though. Okay. To jump back to that for a moment.
Yeah.
So his sister is in South Korea for the Olympics.
Right.
She went to the presidential palace for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
First time, I believe, they said that had ever happened. She relays to the South Korean president that Kim Jong-un invites him to come to the North for talks.
Actually, I think handed him an actual letter.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by all accounts, a lot of people have worried, I think on both sides of the aisle, about President Trump and how he was handling North Korea and threatening to wipe him off the map and all these other things. Now, on one hand, you could say, all right, maybe that's inflammatory, et cetera, et cetera. However, for the last 20 years, through both sides of the aisle, we've had presidents trying to deal with this and we've got nothing done. So maybe we try this tact. Maybe he acts like we're going to blow them off the map, sees what that does. I don't know. That could be debated separately. But what I do know is that in the end, Kim Jong-un stuck to his guns. He has a nuclear weapon. Whether he can get it to the U.S. or not, we don't know. How much further they're going to get, we don't know. But Kim Jong-un is just doing nothing but buying himself time. Now, by all accounts, the people of his country are suffering. They're poor. They're starving. And God knows what else. That's what we hear. We don't have great access, right, to the inside of North Korea. But,
no, we still
but
don't.
That's how it sounded. We're sanctioning the snot out of them, and they're still getting help probably from the Russians and the Chinese. But it's a tough life over there, as we understand. But he's still producing a nuclear weapon and capability of getting it to the mainland United States, which gives him the ultimate power to have to be dealt with.
Yeah.
He becomes not an annoying stepchild. He becomes somebody who's going to have a seat at the table. And that's what he wanted, and it sounds like that's what he's going to get. What is Donald Trump going to get out of this? Well, this is the interesting thing. So if these two meet and they come to some sort of agreement and maybe there is going to be some sort of peace between North and South Korea, Donald Trump is going to put himself in line for a Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, yeah.
Donald Trump might win a gosh darn Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
They're going to he's rightfully somewhat going to be able to claim that he is the one that got them to this.
By standing up at the beginning and threatening the big nuclear button that he's got.
And Kim Jong-un will be able to claim victory, and so will Donald
Trump. Oh, sure. He won't lose face.
God, this is a crazy ass.
Here's the other thing that President Trump will get out of that.
By the way, not snowing in Skokie.
Yeah, well, thank you, Susan. It will be. Just get the shovel. Trust
me. Want all of you to start yelling at Roger. Roger, is that snowing here?
Yeah,
Roger!
You know,
you said 1 to 2 inches, Roger!
Yeah. Give yourself about another 10 minutes. Look out the window again. You'll
text us back in 10 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
It's about how much time we have left.
But here's something else that he's going to get out of this. Another hotel location.
The North Korean Trump Tower?
Yeah.
All right. Rory and Max coming up with the morning show in a little bit. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you a couple more minutes here. 720 WGN 630. Rod says snowing in Roselle, Hanover Park, and Hoffman Estates.
There you go.
815 says snowing pretty good in the Dixon area. 336 says President Reagan called Nancy mommy. That's
there you go.
What we're remembering.
Go. Yep.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, those are the updates.
Thank our listeners for those answers. We always know they'll come through.
Somebody says Shameless is another show worth watching. I believe that's a Showtime show. That's the William H. Macy one, I believe, set in Chicago. I've not seen that at all.
Oh, I don't. I've not seen that on Prime.
I don't know if it's there yet, sir. Oh. All right. 4:55 in the morning. Coming up next is the morning show. It's Max Armstrong sitting in the big chair this weekend. I believe we can say good morning to Max right now. Max, are you there?
Like that? Why are you imitating someone who says my name?
To me, that is your voice, Max. Max, you rascal! How are you, sir?
I'm well, Matt.
I guess you. I throw a little bit of the penguin into my Max Armstrong there, don't I?
Yeah, I think you do. You know, it's so funny to hear people trying to imitate me.